Well, it's Thursday, February 13th, so happy Valentine's Day if you celebrate Valentine's Day. I don't know what that means, but if you celebrate Valentine's Day, happy Valentine's Day. Okay, so I want to talk to you a little tiny bit about Beethoven. I'm working on this Beethoven project where I, in 1 week, less than a week, 6 days, am going to be presenting to my local chapter of the Music Teachers National Association. So this is my peers, my piano teacher colleagues. And this is going to be a rough draft, I'm afraid, very rough draft, of a presentation that I'll be giving at MTNA in Chicago in March. So if you're coming to MTNA, please come and say hello, even though it's going to be at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, which is the worst. But anyway, so I'm going through all the Beethoven sonatas, and what's been really fun, I think I talked about this last time a little bit, it still is fun, is going through and reading and just kind of looking for where the problem spots are without any responsibility of solving them. And I wanted to tell you about a little hypothesis that I came up with that then I completely disproved almost as soon as I came up with it, so too bad for me. So I've made it through most of volume 2 now. I just played through opus 90 this morning, so just a few left. And I was thinking about how a lot of these pieces don't actually have that many moments that are horrible for small hands. Like, pretty much in a lot of them, if you're okay with an octave, like truly okay, because a lot of times you have to play lots of octaves, then there aren't that many really horrible problems. And I was wondering, so this didn't even actually get to the point of being a hypothesis. This was more of a question. I was wondering if maybe when he writes his pieces and dedicates them to women, like maybe women might be playing them, maybe he was having fewer places that would be problems for small hands. So I was just kind of playing around with that idea without even having gone through and looking at all the dedications yet, but I was thinking that might be a fun thing to do, to look through at the dedications and just see, you know, if he dedicates it to a woman, does he write music for a small hand? Well, not according to the Grafen Moritz von Lixnowsky, unfortunately. So I don't actually know anything about her, except that she's a countess. Because in Opus 90, we have this hellhole. I need a better word than hellhole. I really want to call things a hellhole in my presentation, but I'm aware that that's not appropriate for everybody. And also, if I'm going to make a handout that people will take home and then share with their students, hellhole is probably not the best description. Problematic spot, let's call it. Anyway, we have this business. This is going to be a total mess because, like I said, not practicing it. This is Opus 90, measure 54. So that is just terrible. I only play a little bit. So nice music. If we had three hands, this would be really nice in the left hand, but I'm going to play with two hands. So that's really nice. But the right hand is way up here, so there's not even any possibility of taking things with the right hand. So this, boy, that's like right back in Chopin Etude land. And if you can't do an octave with four, there's just no way. So I'm just imagining poor small-handed pianists sweating and crying and working and working and working with this, where in theory, maybe somebody with a larger hand, it wouldn't be such a big deal. See, I can kind of do it fast, but it's sloppy, and I would have to practice that a lot. So I have this color coding system that I'm using where green is an easy to solve problem just by like taking in another hand or something like that. And yellow is something you can do if you work on it, and red is something that will just never be satisfying. So I made this one be kind of a dark orange because I think probably with a ton of practice, this can work with a small hand. But boy, that is just a big challenge there. We'll call it that. So anyway, I don't have any giant insights about Beethoven besides that. It's been fun visiting some of these pieces, some of which I've played pretty intensely. Like, it was fun to go back into the Waldstein, you know, this one. I don't remember. remember. I'm doing that from... Anyway, but that was fun. And the Appassionata. I have a student working on this. He's in Vienna right now, but it'll be really fun to work on it when he comes back. So that was fun. And then... what else is in volume two that I really love? I'm trying to think of what stood out for me as being just so nice. The E flat that I love so much is in this volume, I think, right? The 31s? I think the Opus 31s are in here. Yes. Let me find this because it's so nice. Where are you? I'm flipping through the paper volume, but I've actually been mostly doing this on the iPad, which has been weird but fun. This one, Liebst du mich. Favorite chord ever. And then this thing. It's so nice. And then it goes into, where does it go? It get into the, oh, here. Second theme. So nice. I love it. And then this thing. I haven't practiced that since college. I was going to say high school. Anyway, it's fun to revisit some of these old friends. That one is really nice. It was nice to go through the little Opus 49 ones. I'm giving those to some of my students who are secondary students. So it's been fun to play around with this. But I don't feel, unfortunately, I don't feel like I have any gigantic, I know so much more about Beethoven than I did. Maybe I will when I'm done with the project. I'm not there yet. Maybe I don't have to have gigantic life-changing epiphanies all the time. Maybe it's just nice to enjoy playing some music once in a while. And maybe the epiphany is playing through Beethoven and just enjoying it, because there's so much struggle, I think, that he went through writing it, and certainly that I've gone through learning it when I've learned it, that maybe the ability to kind of float along the top is sort of nice once in a while. Okay, I wanted to tell you a little bit about last weekend, even though it feels like a really long time ago, because it was an audition weekend. And so I'm thinking a little bit about auditions that I wanted to talk about. And then I also wanted to talk about a performance that I did. And so let me just tell you about that. So first about auditions. So there were quite a few piano auditions last weekend, which was great. It's really wonderful. And there were a couple that I was really, really, really excited about. And, you know, I'm always, it's such a funny thing when you're auditioning students, because sometimes they come in and they're such interesting musicians, and then you give them a lesson and they're wonderful learners, and you can see specific areas where they need to grow that you feel like you can really specifically help them in growing in those areas. So it's almost like you see this person and you imagine what they could become with your help, right? And it's a little bit like falling in love, but it's not falling in love. I mean, I suppose you could fall in love with somebody and imagine what they could become, but it's really this vision of helping the person grow. Maybe that's a nice thing for falling in love. I don't know. Anyway, I had really strong positive connections, I felt, with both of these students, and I really, 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 .. 100, really hope that they choose my school, Sonoma Conservatory, Gettysburg College, and come and study with me, because I would just love to have them here. I think I can really help them. I think they would do really well here. I just really would love to have them here. But of course, with auditions, you know, it's this funny thing, because you do fall in love and you have this really strong connection, and then you don't know. So I make my recommendations to admissions in general for the college. I'm quite confident that these particular students I'm thinking of will get in. So that's not something I'm worried about, although once in a while it is. But then also sometimes the students are wonderful, and a lot of other people have fallen in love with them too, and the students choose someplace else. So it's this funny thing of having to kind of go all in on the day and really meet them and work with them and very much open my heart and be completely with them to see what it would be like to work with them. And then what I have to do after that is when they leave campus, I have to shut them out of my mind so that I don't break my heart when it turns out that they went somewhere else. If they did, it might be that both of these students will come and that would be totally exciting. What I have to do right now, and I know this from many years in the audition land, is I have to forget about them. So I'm trying to forget about these two students that I really was excited about. And then I also wanted to talk about another student who came and played. And this is something that I've seen happen many, many, many times. And I don't know about this student. So this was a student who came and played and did not play a particularly strong audition. Maybe was nervous, maybe was playing under tempo, maybe, I'm speaking generally, so this isn't actually about one particular person last weekend. Sometimes people come, maybe they're playing music that is pretty easy, that doesn't really show what they can do. Maybe sometimes they haven't had training that pushes them to where they should be. And sometimes somebody will come in and play an audition that really doesn't show them at their best. And then, or maybe they've never reached their best yet. But anyway, doesn't show them at their best. And then sometimes they'll come in for a lesson and there will be a couple of moments where I explain a thing to them or show something to them and they pick it up immediately, just immediately. And there's this flash of, oh, this person has a great learning curve. And this person, even though this person didn't show a great audition, this person has so much potential and that's so exciting. So that's one of those things that's hard to navigate. And I will say that in my own sort of assessment of auditions, I always try to kind of err on the side of potential. If I think somebody really has the potential to thrive and grow, I try to let them in if I think they can. But then it's the same thing where you don't know what's going to happen at the other side. Anyway, so just lots of auditions and lots of intense interactions with people and just kind of thinking about that. And then the other thing that happened last weekend is I played the Chopin Fantasy Impromptu, which I've been talking about on here a little bit. So I want to say a couple things about it. One is that I did not feel good in this performance. It was at 8:45 in the morning, which is not a great time to be performing. And I had just had this really big argument like half an hour before with my son, who's in fourth grade and hilarious. But we were all ready to leave for school and everything was fine. And then suddenly he couldn't find the sweatshirt that he wanted. And I wanted him to wear another sweatshirt that was right there and available. And he didn't want to. And we had this whole, it was fine, but we had this clash and this conflict that we then had. I honestly don't remember if he found his sweatshirt or wore the other one. I don't know. But anyway, instead of being peaceful and calm and ready to get on stage, I was sort of at boiling point, and then I had to bring myself down from boiling point. And this is a piece, this is a Fantasy Impromptu Opus 66. It has this, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but it has this opening, so it's got this nice long note where you can kind of settle yourself, and I did that my best as I could, and then it goes here, and then it just goes for pages. And so it's here. When I'm playing it really well, I can play it completely up to tempo and I feel so much control over those fast notes in the right hand. And it's, I feel like I have all of this control so that it's almost like painting with watercolors so that I don't have to worry about each individual little note, but I can make exactly the shapes that I want and it feels really good and the sound is soft and beautiful. And I did not feel that way that morning. I felt a little bit, I don't know how to say it, like ham-fisted or like I didn't quite trust my fingers. It didn't feel good. So I ended up playing a little bit under tempo. And here's the thing that I think is nice about it. So I'm giving myself credit about this and not beating myself up about it. Although I was not happy with how it felt to play it, the audience had a really good experience of the piece. And so even though I didn't feel good, the audience got what they needed. And, you know, could it have been much better? Absolutely. but they felt, or at least from what I could see from the expressions on people's faces, people felt like they got what they needed from the piece. So I think that's actually kind of a good milestone for me in learning this piece, and maybe just to pass on for what it's worth. If you can play the piece so that it can satisfy an audience, that is one milestone. Obviously, what you really want is to play it so that it also satisfies you, but it's nice when, even if you're operating at about 65%, it still is good enough. So I felt good about that, especially because I haven't been performing a lot in the last few months. So you never quite know how it's going to feel on stage if you're not used to being on stage. So that part of it was good. And then I'm actually in a time crunch because I have a meeting in a few minutes. But let me tell you, no, I will talk to you about Ornaments in the Chopin next time. I'm not telling you about Ornaments in the Chopin. But let me just play a little bit. So in the middle section, we have this. I am going to tell you about this. I feel like it. So in the Chopin, in the middle section, we have this. I'm going to play some of the variants that I do. So that's what Chopin wrote, but that happens a bunch. So I think it's kind of nice to do this once. I'm not totally happy with this part, how that works. And then he also has this. So I like to do that's not exactly what I worked out, but what I wanted to show you is just that I'm kind of having fun thinking about these ornaments. So once he does this, but I think it's kind of fun to do this. So that's dumb to keep the chromatic scale all the way down to the bottom. So I'm still working something out. And I think I am going to compose it completely and then learn it. I'm not going to just improvise it. Even though it's called an impromptu, I'm sure he could improvise it, but I'm not as good an improviser as he is. Okay, so that's just a little bit of what's happening in the Chopin. I will play that for you one of these days, but today is not that day. You know what? I'll play it for you next time. In 2 weeks, I will play you the Chopin. So I wanted to finish by telling you about an incredibly obvious epiphany that I had. So I've been doing yoga for the past 3 weeks and the past many years, but I've been consistently doing yoga for the last 3 weeks, and it feels so much better, and it's really, I feel so much like my joints move more loosely. It's just, I feel so much better in my body. It's really nice. So one of the things that I did as part of my, like, do yoga more, was sign up for a month trial at a yoga studio in town. So I went to a yoga class in the morning, and I've always said that I hate yoga with music. And I think that's because usually when I've done yoga with music, it's like, you know, it's this kind of thing. And I feel totally annoyed that I can hear what's going to happen. I can predict what's going to happen. And it's just like, basically, I hate yoga with piano music, I think is what it is. Anyway, I went to this yoga class in the local studio, and they were playing some yoga music, but also just some pop music. And I loved it. I loved it so much. And there was this great moment. I don't remember. I don't know who this is or what the name is of the song, but you probably know it. It's this where it does this. And it was sort of in the middle of the class. And I was really shaking and sweating. I was doing a balance pose. And I could barely do it. And it was singing. My body is starting to quiver, and the palms of my hands getting wet. I got no reason to doubt you, baby. It's all a terrible mess. So my palms were quivering, and I was sweaty, and I was a terrible mess, and it was this fabulous moment that I totally loved. I just felt present and joyful and alive, and I loved it. And then I went back to yoga yesterday thinking, oh, this is going to be so great to go and have the music and do the whole thing. And they were having some sort of problem with the Wi-Fi or something. I don't know. But there was no music. So it was silent yoga, which is, by the way, how I've been doing yoga for pretty much my entire life. And I spent the entire class just having a tantrum. Like, I was just having a tantrum the whole time about how there was no music. And I kept noticing that I was being angry and then getting mad at myself that I was being angry. And then I would go, okay, don't be angry. You're trying to find some joy and be in your body. And so they would come back to the moment. But there was one moment where they had us do plank. And I was just like, no, I'm not doing that. I was so unwilling to even try because I was completely mad about the lack of, honestly, pop music in my life, which was just kind of hilarious. So this is the most obvious epiphany in the world that working out with music is better than working out without music. And so this morning when I was doing yoga just with a person talking, actually I'll tell you who because she's great and it's free. I've been doing some of the classes with Yoga with Adrian, which is online on YouTube, and she's wonderful, but she doesn't have any music. And so I actually just put on Spotify another yoga playlist while I did that, and it made my life so much better. So totally obvious epiphany, working out with music is better, yoga with music is better. It was a fun discovery, even though I feel ridiculous that I'm just making that discovery now. So that's it. You can find out more about me at jocelynswigger.com. You can follow me on Twitter at jocelynswigger. Also on Instagram, but I never ever post if I'm honest. You can also listen to my improvisation podcast, which is Just Piano Improv. And thank you so much for being my practice buddy.